Now, I'm going to read some of this novel, a couple of sections. This first section, the narrator of the novel is off on a kind of search. He lives a life of haying in the summertime and feeding cattle in the wintertime and going off almost all the time on drinking sprees and then coming back and working and going off again. It's sort of a common problem on a lot of reservations. This book takes place on the Fort Belknap Reservation in north central Montana. But in this particular passage, the narrator meets a man who he's from New York and he's absconded with some funds. It's not quite clear where he worked or how he did it, but this is just a barroom scene, and it's about fish. The narrator insists there are no fish around, and everybody else insists there are. I'm a fisherman. Not successful. "Nothing to be done about it," the man said. He dabbed his cigar into the bottom of the ashtray. "Happens all the time. Hell, you're not unique. Happened to me plenty of times." We were sitting at the bar of the Pomp Room, which was connected to the Regent's Roost Hotel. The man was from New York. He had shown me his credit cards when I said I didn't believe him. "Will you take me? Do I look like the sort who had run out on a wife and two beautiful daughters? Hell, by your standards, I was a rich man." "You look rich enough to me," I said, and he did. He had on one of those khaki outfits that African hunters wear. I thought of McLeod and Henderson in the sports afield. His outfit was crisp with a flowery handkerchief tied around his neck. "Well, that's another story. We're trying to solve your problems." "Problems? Of course. The only problem I had now was trying to stay out of the way of the man I had helped Dougie roll. That was the only problem that was still clear to me. The others had gone away. Chance. Dumb, unadulterated damn luck. I was on my way to the Middle East, had my tickets in my hand. I drained off my beer and pointed at the empty bottle. Barman. Damned if I didn't just turn around, halfway to the plane and everything. Tore up my ticket right in front of her. My jacket was drying on the stool next to me. I had stopped shivering hours ago, just after he had bought me my first Boilermaker. I had felt a little self-conscious coming in, but the second one took care of that. Now, even the fear of a beating, or even getting killed, was subsiding. I lit one of the cigars that lay on the bar, picked up my fishing gear and drove away. "You won't have much luck here," I said. "What, fish?" "You won't have much luck here. Caught a mess of them yesterday. But there are no fish around here. Pike, three of them over 5 pounds. Caught one big northern in Minnesota that ran over 30. That was Minnesota. That wasn't here. You'd be lucky to catch a cold here. Caught some nice little rainbows, too. Pan size. There aren't any rainbows." He looked at me. He was a big man, soft and healthy, like a baby. He combed his gray hair straight back, so that his red-veined nose seemed too big for his face. "Tell you what," he snorted into his hand, "I'll take you out with me tomorrow, and if we don't catch any fish, I'll buy you the biggest steak in, where are we? Malta. You have an outfit?" "At home, but that's 50 miles away." "No problem. I've got a spinning rig you can use. Furthermore, I'll use my fly rod, and if I don't catch more fish than you, you can have both outfits. Now, you can't beat that deal." I calculated how much both outfits would be worth. "What if neither one of us catches any fish?" "I'll throw in the biggest steak in Kalamazoo." "There are no fish in the river," I said confidently, "not even a sucker." "Hell," he winked at the bartender who had been listening, then ordered another Boilermaker for me and a double scotch for himself. "Get one for yourself," he called after the bartender. Two men in suits opened the door. Then, as though they realized this was the wrong place, they hesitated. After a short conversation, they came in, moving down the bar like cows on slick ice, their eyes not yet adjusted to the dimness of the small blue lights in the ceiling. As they passed me, I smelled the wet wool of their suits. One of them giggled. The bartender followed them down the other side of the bar as though he were stalking them. He was a skinny man. His red vest and black string tie made him look like a frontier gambler. But he knew all the baseball scores and had been to New York once. Standing a few feet away from me, a barmaid leaned on her tray. She poked the ice cubes in her Coke with her finger and glared at herself in the mirror. Although I couldn't see a cigarette near her, she was blowing smoke rings. The two men sat down on the other side of the man who had torn up his airplane ticket. What do you think? Shall I ask him? About the fish? What else? What else were we talking about? Or would you rather admit you made a mistake? I shook my head. You said you caught a mess of gold eyes. Did I say that? But you're mistaken. There aren't any gold eyes in this river. I've never even heard of gold eyes. He turned to the men in suits. This man says there are no fish around here. The two suits looked up. One had a red tie. He says there are no fish around here, he repeated. Why, that's false, the first suit said. There are pike in the reservoir south of town. Just the other day I caught a nice bunch. In the reservoir south of town, the second suit said. Ah, you see, said the man who had torn up his airplane ticket. But not in a river. It is too muddy and the fish can't see your bait. Not likely. It's clear and cold and the fish are firm. Yes, said the second suit. Just the other day, my wife and her girlfriend fished in the river, and they said it was clear and cold. I have often remarked on the clarity of the water. It isn't muddy like the reservoir south of town. First suit tasted his drink. He fished out a cherry and nibbled at it. No matter, no fish there anyway. In the reservoir, I asked. Hell no, said the man who had torn up his airplane ticket. In the creek west of here. The reservoir is full of sunfish. Second suit, who had finished his drink, ordered another round. He lifted his replenished glass to the mirror and said, I don't understand these people around here. Neither do I, said the man who had torn up his airplane ticket. Hell, it's uncanny. I began to feel the effects of the Boilermakers. I winked at myself in the mirror, and the barmaid who had returned glared back. I don't understand the people around here. Like that man down there. I pointed down the bar to second suit. He was fiddling with a camera. I wouldn't know. I'm new here. She blew more smoke rings. There was still no cigarette near her. Wait a minute. Just a minute here. The man who had torn up his airplane ticket looked past me at the girl. Don't I know you from someplace? How should I know? But I've seen you before. Somewhere else. My memory is like a steel trap. He narrowed his eyes. Bismarck, North Dakota? She shook her head. Minneapolis? She blew a smoke ring at the mirror. That's funny. You sure it wasn't Chicago? I've never been there. I might be from the West Coast. That's it. Seattle. His elbow bounced off my ribs. Hi, you see? Seattle, I asked. I wouldn't be from Seattle for all the rice in China. She counted some coins on her tray. Now Portland might be different. They've got roses there. My mother raises morning glories, I said. Los Angeles? I hate morning glories. I hate anything to do with morning. But that's just the name. They bloom in the evening, too. Even at night, I can smell them outside my window. Our cat used to lie in them because it was cool. Our cat smothered my baby sister. He lay on her face one night and she couldn't breathe. She would have looked just like me, only she had a birthmark right here. She pressed her finger into the side of her neck. She leaned closer, still without looking at me, and whispered, "That's why he thinks he knows me. He remembers my sister's birthmark." "But why doesn't he remember you? San Francisco?" "Oh, he will. Can't you see he's trying right now? San Francisco? I used to dance all the time. That's why he doesn't remember me, because I was always dancing, and the faster I danced, the less he saw of me. But he's from New York, I said. He used to pay me. That's why I hated it. He used to pay me $1 to dance for him. She laughed. It was such fun twirling around the room, faster and faster until I must have been a blur. That's why he forgets my face. San Francisco? Santa Rosa. My wife was from Santa Rosa, but she's dead now. I could just tell him who I am. Do you think I should? No, I said, let him guess. I suppose, but it might make him mad. That's one thing you learn about men. You don't joke with them unless you mean business. She picked up her tray and walked back to the booths. The two suits watched her. Nice little twitch, said the first suit. His red necktie had worked its way out of his coat. Yes, said the second suit. I wouldn't mind a little bit of that myself. Ah, but she would wear you out. You can tell by the hips. My wife has hips like that, and it's all I can do to stay in bed with her. My wife has hips like that, I said, but she has smaller breasts. Small breasts are best, said second suit. My wife has big breasts, and they just get in the way. What you can't get in your mouth is wasted anyway. My wife has breasts that hang down to her knees, and her nipples are too dark. Pink nipples are easily the best, I said. My wife is dead, said the man who had torn up his airplane ticket. The bartender brought us around to drinks on the house and recited some baseball scores. The airplane man continued to name names, but the barmaid wasn't there. Second suit fumbled with his camera. He had the insides out, and the film was hanging down over the counter. My leg had gone numb, as though waterlogged by the Boilermakers. At least it didn't ache. When the barmaid returned, I looked at her breasts. They were not as large as I had thought. Her white blouse was a little small, stretched across them, straining the button between them. The airplane man jerked his thumb at me and said, "This man doesn't believe there are gold eyes in the river." "Of course there are," she said. "I caught 7 of them just this morning." "You can't mean it. Positively." The airplane man glared at her. Suddenly he jerked upright and roared. I thought Fursuit had stuck a knife in his back, then rushed her, arms extended, as if to hug or strangle her. At the last instant, he swerved and hit the door, plunging into the night. The barmaid smiled at me. "It's still raining." "You should have danced for him," I said. "No," she shook her head sadly. "It wouldn't be the same." That's the end of that piece there.